Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Before we get into this episode, let me tell you about a great new podcast from my friends Kate and Lori, the Untitled Gen X Podcast. I kind of describe it as four Gen Xers and the people who love us. This week's episode takes on A-ha's Take On Me, chronicling the group's struggles to get the song made in the first place, then have the music video turn out to be one of the best ever. Great stuff from Kate and Lori. Check them out on the Untitled Gen X Podcast, wherever you podcast. A little about my story before my conversation with designer, entrepreneur, and mom, Bernadette Capulong. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white man in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job, then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. My guest this episode is no stranger to struggles and challenges. Bernadette Capulong started her own design firm pretty much in her kitchen in Southern California during the recession in 2009. She stepped back into the corporate world, but a few years later would put the entrepreneur hat back on around the same time she stepped into the most meaningful shoes of motherhood, adopting her son.
Hard being a single parent. I know that for...
Yeah, I mean, we're blessed in that my mother-in-law lives with us and has for many years. She makes sure that we all stay fed, you know, at the very least, yeah, at the very least.
Filipino?
Yeah.
Of course she's going right. to be fed. She probably thought you were too skinny.
What's really cool is that, I'm an only child. So my wife has two sisters. One who lives up the street from us, we're in Santa Clarita, one who lives just up the street from us, and the other one lives in Northridge. Everybody sees each other and talks to each other all the time, and it's really kind of just a cool dynamic to witness and be a part of and experience and, you know, quite frankly, benefit from. And one of the sisters actually is moving in with her family in this next month or so. It's something that my wife had actually been trying to get her sister to do for a couple of years. And and it just never quite happened. The timing just wasn't right, you know, whatever the case. We are surrounded by love. I mean, just surrounded by family. Yeah. And I've never really had to navigate a death in the family. My grandfather died when I was 17, and we were really close, but he had spent the last couple of years of his life living up in Canada with other family because he had dementia or Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was that separation to really kind of make it a little bit easier. And then another grandfather died, but that was expected. Navigating this, I mean, it's really going to be interesting to see how the girls do over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Of course, when they experience these things that girls and women should experience with their mothers.
And you know what the thing is you said one of them is 6 years old and how old's the other
six
one?
Six and eight. They're six and eight.
Yeah. They don't really understand death like you and I.
Right.
And that's a psychological thing, right? So the way we experience death, we like to talk about it or not, right? But typically the healthy ways to kind of talk about your feelings or whatever, kids don't at that stage. They don't talk about those things. And I know that because my son has a therapist that kind of helps cope with, you know, he's adopted. So I wanted to bring someone on board to kind of help him understand the whole process. And so we lost our dog. I know it's not a human, but we lost a dog somewhere before November. And I was talking to the therapist about it and she's like, yeah, they don't process it like we do. I mean, you know, it's sort of like out of sight, out of mind.
And this is one of the things that my wife was really, really good about was making sure to have just really open and honest conversations with the girls about what was happening. When Wiley was 2.5,
3 years old, the youngest, it's when she first got sick. And she showed all the scars. She showed all the drains after her double mastectomy. And I mean, just she was super open and honest about what was happening. And,
right.
and last year, very open and honest about what was going to happen and that she was going to die. Didn't know exactly when, didn't know if we'd make it to Thanksgiving or Christmas mm-hmm. or, you know, Wiley's birthday this year. But the conversation was honest enough that she asked them whether they wanted her to be cremated or buried and explained the differences between them mm-hmm. and, yeah. you know, what do you want mommy cremated and in an urn at home or do you want her buried mm-hmm. and we go visit in a cemetery? I mean, these are conversations I never would have even thought to have.
Yeah.
But she was just like, boom, we got to talk about it. Let's go.
Yeah. And I think that's really healthy because that kind of takes the mystery out of it and really makes it a reality, right? Like she wasn't candy coating anything because yeah. they were younger. It was more like, you know, understand, you know, try to understand this now. And they probably will not really understand it as they get older. They'll think back and remember, oh, I remember when my mom talked about cremation.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was little, probably younger than that, where my parents went to a funeral and it was an open casket. I didn't know the person. It was a friend of my dad's, but I was freaked out. It was an open casket.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand what was going on. What is that? You know, I didn't understand the concept, but it's like left like this lasting impression to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I mean, here you are, you know, 20 years later.
Still talking about it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're so kind. Yeah. You're so kind. I caught that.
How old was your...
Hey, by the way, I got carded the other day.
Did you really?
Oh, nice. I was very impressed. And all they saw were my eyes. There
oh,
you go.
Of course, of course. How old was your son when you adopted him?
He was 3 years old, going on four. And that's actually, if you know anything about adoption, is a very pivotal age to be adopted. So when they reach that point, anything three or under is very desirable for adoption, you know, it's for the lack of a better word. The older you get, the less likely chances you'll be adopted. So when he was hitting that age, he was, you know, his situation was such that the parents were going to lose parental control. And so they were going to start looking for a forever home. So that's the terminology, forever home. So he was in foster care for a short, somewhat short period of time, waiting to be adopted. And he's Asian, not Filipino, he's Cambodian, but we look very similar. And, you know, I'm a big believer of whether you birth someone naturally or from their heart, you know, God has a way of really just making that connection where it appears as though you are truly family from the heart, from, you know, anywhere else. So when he was put up for, ready for adoption, they reached out to me. And at the time they asked if there were two options for me. So like once you get certified to be an adopted parent, you then get put on this like fast track list where they start sending you options of children that you might be interested in adopting. And there was a, you know, baby was one of the options. And then there was Jace, who's 3 years old. One of my criteria is that I preferred to have an Asian child. Preferred, not necessarily a mandatory, because I knew the reality of Asian children were, you know, not in the adoption program.
Yeah.
It's not to say that Asian parents are the best parents necessarily. It's just, they just don't show up in the adoption.
It's just the reality of it. Yeah. Yeah. The numbers just aren't there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for a brief moment there, I was thinking about, because originally I wanted 0 to 3 was my range. And then I thought about being a single parent, having a baby. And typically if it is a baby, almost always the child has been exposed to some form of alcohol or drugs. which is, you know, almost always the reason why they're up for adoption, because, you know, the mom was either using while she was pregnant, or it was, you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. At that age, it's not, oh, okay, dropped off at a fire station.
Yes, exactly. It's not always an ideal situation. So I also thought about that type of scenario, and they do expose you to that in the adoption program. So when you decide to be an adopted parent, you go through, like, I think an 8-week program for certification. And those are one of those scenarios that they do talk about, you know, children, babies that are, you know, either have alcohol syndrome, or parents were using meth, and, you know, and you have to deal with withdrawal. That just breaks my heart when you think about a baby that has to go through withdrawal. So I just wasn't prepared for that. When I really started putting pen to paper, I was like, okay, you know, let's be honest with ourselves. And I just said, you know, and it was really interesting, because it was kind of like, you know, you decide sight unseen, right? All you have is either a short or no background at all on the child. And you literally have to commit before you get any more information or you even see images of the children. They won't even allow you to see images.
Really?
Yeah. Because they don't want you to.
I figured there would at least be a passport size photo.
No. And this is through this, you know, through the state, mm-hmm. right? So if you do private adoption, it's a whole different scenario.
Okay.
I mean, you are going through, you know, private, everything is open. You know, you learn about the parent, all that stuff is different. I was going through the state.
Okay. Interesting.
Which is where, you know, the kids get in the foster care program and then they get adopted out to a forever home. So that's the process I took. So you don't really know any more than they tell you, and you definitely will not get images of the child until you actually commit to the process of adopting them, which is really, they fast-tracked me. So basically I had a weekend. I had one night with the child. First it was like a play date at the park for an hour or two.
Yeah.
Then it became like a weekend. And I was like, what am I going to do? You know, what do I do with a child? You know, when you're not a parent, you don't know, right? You just don't know.
Potty trained?
He was already potty trained. Yep.
Okay. All right. Yep. Move on in.
Exactly.
got a room for
half
you, buddy.
The problem. Yeah. Half the problem done. So yeah, he was already he had really good manners body trained.
But so when you say fast tracked, a play date at the park and then a weekend. When you say fast tracked, are they basically calling you on a Wednesday, say, can you do this over the next
there
few
you
days?
Go.
And then boom,
yes.
Jace is
boom.
Yours.
Here's a child. And they've even told us there'll be a day where we just show up at your front door and you know, there you go.
It's like a publisher's clearinghouse. It's sort of a big check.
Yes, exactly. It's like, yeah. So you are literally scrambling, you know, to get, you know, baby products or kids products, whatever that is, which I was. His room was not ready. You know, they call you, you commit, you got to get everything ready. And it's basically, yeah. I mean, it weeds out the people that aren't serious.
Yeah.
You know, and it really leaves you no time to, you know, decide otherwise, which, you know, I was fully committed. And
what was that first week like after it was official and you're looking around like, what do you want to do?
He's looking at me going, you again? he was crying the first night he was here. The first thing he said to me is, and it's not like I have a big house, right? It's like, it's a decent sized house, but he went into this room and he's like, this is my room? Wow, this is a big house.
Oh,
and I was like,
cool.
And it was really cool. And it just made me think, of course, you know, I mean, you know, it was interesting. It was an interesting like comment. And he cried the first night. naturally because he's in a new space. And it was really weird. And I also remember thinking that I wouldn't be able to do the things I needed to do, like even take a shower. You know, it's like, what do? I leave him for 10 minutes. What if he like destroys the house?
Yeah. When I was taking care of the girls and they were young, you could just put them in their little bouncer or something like that in the bathroom and right. then just go about your business or whatever. But yeah. at 3 or 4 years old, it's, you know, they're running around, they're opening doors. They're.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's not like he grew up with me for the first 3 years and I kind of knew his pattern or whatever. So I didn't know. I mean, luckily nothing bad happened. I think like the first week he broke, you know, like a painting with glass, which again, not a big deal, but it's stuff like that where you really like end up having to, you know, childproof the place, you know, you start thinking differently. I mean, you know, I lived a long life being, not, you know, not a parent, a single, person, you know, when you're single, it's, you think differently. I mean, don't you agree? It's like, I always say that you don't know what it's like to be a parent unless you actually are doing it. I mean, you can read about it. You could theoretically think about it. Oh yeah, I'm sure that's hard, but you really don't know until you're in it.
Yeah. I think about the types of comments or feelings or whatever I would make or have before I had kids. And I kind of cringe now because I just kind of, I would make fun of the parents. I would make fun of the,
judge.
The, yeah. I would judge. Oh, for sure.
Judge.
Oh, I was judging McJudgerson. Oh, big
time. Oh yeah. Exactly. You're like the first to judge. Like you'd be in a restaurant, right? And you'd hear the child screaming. Now I have empathy for the parents because it's like, you don't know what happened 30 minutes before they sat down with that child.
Right.
You know, you have no idea. You know, you're just seeing the child having, you know, a meltdown.
Now I want to, I want to pick that child up and hold that child and go rock that child to sleep in another part of the restaurant so the parents can have a nice meal. Without that happening. That's what I think of. Because, oh my gosh.
You know how it is. You know how it is.
How old is he now?
He is 9 years old.
Okay.
So it's been about 5 years. Yeah.
So he's going to school on the computer. Okay.
He is, but only last week did he now start going on campus.
Okay.
So this has only been a recent update because all the schools, obviously, here in California have been just shut down, or the majority of the, at least LA County, right? And it's been a really brutal like year with this whole thing. And I know, you know, we've had to adjust, and I'm sure you can relate to this, but for him, the isolation, the, you know, really understanding, you know, the effects of COVID in the beginning, he didn't understand it. He understands it more now.
Yeah.
But not being able to see friends or play with another child for months on end. I mean, he was really playing by himself. I mean, you have two girls, so they can play with each other.
Yeah.
But he was literally outside, and we have like maybe three other families that have kids, but you'd never see them through this whole process because they wanted to keep the kids safe. And so that was hard. That was really hard on him. And it was also really hard on me too, because, you know, we are in the same space 24/7. And the only time you have apart is really when you sleep.
Yep.
And so there was never any like healthy break. And, you know, and I don't care how much you love your child or the person, your spouse or your whatever partner, you need a separation. It's healthy.
It's like,
healthy.
I don't remember. It was on TikTok. I know that for a fact, but I don't remember which user or whatever, but basically said, if you are a parent and you at one point have not said F them kids, then you are not spending enough time with your children.
Yes. Agreed.
And there are so many parents over the last year who have just straight up said F them kids.
Agreed. And it doesn't mean you're a bad parent.
No, it doesn't. It does not.
It means that you're being human realize that every parent has that threshold that they're going to hit. You know, where it's like, it's too much. I mean, we talk a lot about mental health, right? I mean, the kids' mental health, as well as the parents. And then you also talk a lot about how a huge percentage of women in the workforce have quit their jobs. And I mean, it's just a dramatic decrease in the female population because they've quit their jobs because they're taking care of, you know, their kids or someone sick at home. And typically maybe their salaries may not be as high because, you know, so they're the ones to sacrifice their jobs, or, you know, they're typically the nurturer of the two. So, you know, we take a lot on. We take a lot on as moms, for sure, as dads like you. And I have so much respect for that, because I know that you know, being a parent is just such a challenge, not to mention two kids. So, but you're going to do well at it. You're definitely going to do well.
Thank
at
you.
It. Whether you like it or not, we'll make it work.
Yeah, they will thrive in spite of me, is basically what we're saying. So let's go back, though. So it's been six, almost 7 years, give or take, since you became a mom. Does it still give you goosebumps sometimes to kind of hear that, considering?
It does. It does, because I think that I have more of a purpose, you know? I think your career, it's great. It's a great focus. And don't get me wrong, I'm still very driven. However, ultimately, I think, you know, your legacy in this world, you know, it's through your children, right? And what you've done to really set them up for success in their world. Like, my parents supported me growing up. You know, I think that there's more meaning to that in many, many ways. And it enhances these other parts of my life, like my career. You know, it drives me even more, because of course I continue to strive, you know, with him here. I mean, it's just us, right? There's no one else that's paying the bills. So I got to keep, you know, working hard no matter what. And also it's teaching him that, and this is a constant conversation with him, and the Super Bowl was a great, like, analogy of, you know, here's Tom Brady, probably the best quarterback in, you know, history, right? Has been to 10 Super Bowls. Is it 10 now or 11?
Yeah.
I mean, he is driven and focused. He is very much like, what do you call, in the Lakers?
LeBron James.
Very similar. Whatever they touch, they will succeed because they are so driven. And I talked to Jace about that. A lot of times it's like, you know, you really can make any dream come true. I mean, almost any dream, if you set your mind to it, if you really are willing to do the work. I'm a huge believer of you can make your dreams come to life. Yeah. Huge believer. If you focus, you do the work, you get up when you fail, you keep doing it over and over again, those dreams will come to fruition. And that, I love having those conversations with my son, because here's, you know, 9-year-old boy that, you know, started off in his life, maybe not quite the way, and he won't know this until he gets older, but, you know, he was just sort of tossed around a little bit until he found his forever home, making his way in the world, making sense of what's happened to him. And if you know anything about adoption, their number one issue is rejection. It's always rejection. You know, why was I rejected, right? And so that's going to play into his self-esteem and his confidence level. So as a parent, you know, I try to instill those values in him. You know, I try to show him that, hey, you know, I run this business. My parents supported me from a, you know, like, yeah, you have this dream, go for it. You know, I want the same for you. I want you to put your, you know, mind to something and you can make it happen. Whatever it is you want to do, it is yours if you're willing to focus on it. So those are the kinds of conversations where, you know, I take my career and what I've done and I try to set those values and instill that in him.
How many years prior to actually finally adopting Jace had you been either thinking about it or working on it? And I ask that because in the 6-7 years that has followed, how was it surprising? Did it meet expectations?
Yeah.
How was it the first few years compared to how you thought it was going to be?
It's harder. It is, well, I would say parenthood, not necessarily adoption. Yeah. And I'll address the other part. Parenthood is by far the hardest thing I've ever done. And, you know, I've had careers, you know, big name companies. I'm an entrepreneur. That parenting is still harder.
Yeah.
It's still harder. Yeah. And in many ways, and I always say it makes me a better leader when I'm a parent, because a lot of it is very similar, right? Parenting is very similar to leadership. You know, not that I call my employees, you know, children, although sometimes, I don't know, we'll see. Yeah, you can cut that part out.
No, I'm not cutting it out. I'm actually going to highlight it as a clip on the trailer for this particular episode.
Yeah, but no, it's, you know, there are some very like close similarities in how you would lead and parent in many ways. So going back to how I felt about adoption. So I've always wanted to adopt ever since I was little. It was just one of those things that it's like, oh, it'd be kind of fun to adopt.
Really? That's interesting.
I mean, I probably never really knew what that meant, but I just found it to be interesting. So I actually tried having kids, you know, on my own through in vitro. It didn't quite work out. And I would have adopted either way. If I would have had my own natural birth.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I would have still adopted.
Yeah.
So there's some altruistic part of that that is a core in me, that I'm always about helping. And to me, I do feel like adopting a child is sort of, you know, really does help them, you know, bring them into a better world, a better life that they, you know, started off in that they didn't deserve originally. They deserve a really good life. Every child deserves a good life. So it's not like it was came out of nowhere. It was really more like, you know, the in vitro wasn't working out. So it's like, okay, switch it over to.
Right, right. It was always, you know, it was always on the table. It just a matter of when.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest parts of the difference is that technically, even though, you know, I adopted Jace at 3, at the age of 3, he was really 0, right? He was age 0. That's really where I started him off. So he may be 9 now, but I sort of think of him as maybe he's really more like 6, you know, because that's where I came into the picture and really helped mold and shaped him.
Yeah. And I would imagine, considering if he's adoptable at 3 years old or available for adoption at 3 years old, his physical age, sure, 3 years old, but mentally and emotionally, nowhere near that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
When you were getting into the adoption process, had you decided that you wanted a son, or it was something that, like, okay, whoever's available and whoever I connect with, how was that process for you?
Yeah, the gender was not an issue for me.
Okay.
I just, you know, was looking for a child who was healthy. Obviously the connection is one thing, but as I mentioned, it's, you know, you basically commit before you even know. So it was kind of, I'm a very spiritual person, actually. I have very strong faith. So a lot of that I prayed about, and I knew with that strong faith, you know, God would bring someone that was perfect for me. And he certainly did.
I ask that because, prior to finding out that we were going to have a girl, I always just kind of pictured myself as the dad of a son, because especially as an only child, didn't really imagine raising a little girl, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after Maren was born and, you know, she's 1.5, 2 years old, and we've got, you know, Wiley on the way, before we knew we were having a second girl, I actually at that point could not imagine raising a son.
Right.
It had flipped that much, because I can't imagine raising another species, like
right.
introducing another right. species into this environment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know it's kind of like what you had imagined, you know, growing up when you sort of picture who you're going to marry and how many, you know, 2.5 kids, right? One of each, you know, whatever those stats are, it's like, it really is, you know, it's what God gives you. And it's kind of like, okay, there you go. Those are the cards, and you kind of roll with it. And I think, like, looking back, I definitely thought I was going to have two kids, one of each. You know, I think that's natural to want to have one of each. And I sort of did picture more of a girl than a boy, but it, yeah, it didn't really matter to me necessarily. You know, my brother is actually, he has girls. So he sort of, he pictured wanting to have boys,
yeah.
But now
yeah.
he's, you know, I believe it's a curse for him because he was such a bad boy growing up that now, you
raising
know,
my hand karma. Right here, just raising my hand. No, my wife had a coworker who had three girls, and he and his wife were trying for a boy, twin girls.
Oh, my goodness.
So
yeah.
Five girls with the youngest being twins.
Yeah, God's telling you something there.
I do want to touch on what might be a sensitive subject, and that you would every year dress your dogs for Halloween. in these very elaborate outfits. And now that you have a son, do you take as much pride and joy in those costumes as you did for those dogs?
Yeah, so do I put on like flamboyant like outfits with hoodies and, you know, big smiley faces on them? Yeah, I probably spare my child from the embarrassment of the, you know, goofy outfits that I...
You got it all out on the dogs, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly. Because that's really an expression of me more than anything, right? So I kind of want Jace to have his own expression. I'll ruin his life in other ways.
Yes.
Put it that way.
He's not a teenager yet. You've got right now, 9 years old is not embarrassed to be around mommy.
Okay. Right.
13,
right.
14, 15... Oh, you've got time
around
to prepare.
Around the corner,
just like,
yeah.
Just wringing your hands together.
I know,
like, oh.
Exactly.
I am
They're
already...
They're at a stage. They're at a stage, though, where they are starting to be all embarrassed, you know, which is interesting to see that.
Lean into that. I beg of you, just please lean into that.
I know, right?
Let's he have will a love fun. You that much more for it? Seriously. Seriously. And you know, I've got my girls, and I do embarrassing things for them on Instagram and TikTok and all this other stuff. And
That's great.
Whether we take video of it or not, I don't care. I will do as embarrassing a thing as I can to make them laugh and, you know, make them have fun and everything like that. But really it's just preparing them and me for when they're 13 and 15.
Right.
And
right.
they've got hopefully some mutual friends over, and out comes dad just, oh man.
Yeah,
I cannot wait.
They'll be like, Dad, you're embarrassing me again.
I know. And I've got, two brothers-in-law. I've got one brother-in-law has two girls also around the same age. And then another has two boys, ages 1 and 7. So it's like... the things that we are going to do to embarrass these children on a regular basis.
Exactly.
I cannot wait.
And it's like, yeah, it's character building. Character building,
yes,
right?
Yes. For me or them.
Embarrassment. Yeah, I know, exactly. Both, I guess.
Yeah, and honestly, it really just comes down to just trying to make a connection with them because I spent many, many years just disconnected from family because I was so focused on other things, focused on career, focused on distractions, that the last year and a half has, you know, really blessed me and gifted me the opportunity to reconnect. And now, it's more essential than ever.
Yeah.
It's more absolutely. Essential than ever for their well-being and my survival. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, and I can't understate that.
Yeah. And layer on top of the whole pandemic, right, of last year, where I believe it's, you know, as bad as it was as a you know, there's some positive messages that have come out of that. It really just forced people to, not that you needed forcing, but in some cases, some people did, forced people to really be together, you know, to spend that quality time together without all the stimulation of the, you know, internet or
oh, I needed forcing. Let's not sugarcoat it. I needed forcing. I needed forcing. I was not present. Yeah. I was not. I was not there. I was not connected, like I should have been. You know, I talked to my wife. You know, I don't know. It was a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, and you know, I talked about having three jobs, and she's like, "No, you've got five." You know, because I you know, I was on the radio and I was a teacher and I had the podcast, and she's like, "No. Those are three, four, and five. You've got husband and father first." Mm. And, you know, that was very eye opening, you know, like, cause I just always kept things separate, you know? Right. And so, like I said, no sugarcoating it. I was forced, and like, it was a blessing to be forced and to be able to have that opportunity to reconnect, because there are so many people to kind of, carry your point even further. There are so many people who don't have the opportunity to reconnect because they end up in jail, or they end up hurt, or they end up dead, or you know, with some kind of nasty divorce where nobody gets to see anybody.
Right. You
know? And and so it's a blessing. It's absolute blessing. The pandemic, not a blessing.
Right.
What the pandemic has forced people to do, absolute blessing.
Exactly. Exactly. So did that, was there a little sacrifice that you had to make there in terms of, you know, the three jobs, calling down to two or whatever?
Well, no, I mean, one of the jobs, was taken away from me because of my poor decisions and mistakes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then it actually forced me to focus, more on just being a better teacher, being, you know, in terms of just jobs, but more importantly, just being a better father and husband, you know, and now, going back to the gifts of things, I now have the gift of just being a teacher and then just being a dad,
and
doing a podcast like this and doing a podcast for the Santa Clarita Valley Signal and doing videos for PasadenaNow.com. Those things are really their passion projects. You know, if we go back to that word connected, it helps keep me connected to the workforce, if you will. Helps keep me connected to news, because I spent most of the pandemic not even watching the news.
These types of outlets, you know, especially the podcast, I mean, there's an audience for everything, right? I mean, really, you can find a podcast for any type of subject you can think of. And I think that they've, especially now, have become even more popular. I know they've been around for a few years now, but they've grown in popularity because people want to consume more and more content. Even more now after 2020, and people are consuming content in different times of their days now.
Yep.
Right? There's so much option out there. You can listen to an entrepreneurial podcast one day, another one on Michelle Obama's podcast, whatever that is. There's just something.
I do appreciate that you started with the entrepreneurial podcast as a nice segue into the house podcast, talking about design. And becoming an entrepreneur and running your own business, how did you decide, okay, I want to start my own as well?
At this level of my career, and I still am very much in tune with, you know, creative direction and strategy with my team, but I have a team of designers that are really making the magic happen. And I sort of believe at this level, you know, it's really about being an authority in your area and also sharing knowledge, you know, to another generation or just, you know, the peers. Right. So, and there's, again, there's just so many great, you know, topics to talk about that's related to, you know, our podcast, the House Report focuses on design and branding, leadership and entrepreneurship. Of course it has to have design and branding in it because that's the core of who we are.
Right.
But the leadership is a big part of that because I do talk a lot about leadership. I talk about female empowerment, very big proponent of women in business, and then entrepreneurship, which I sort of fell you know, by accident. I always say I'm the accidental entrepreneur because I didn't really mean to be. It just kind of happened and it worked because it looked like I might be okay at it. And then I focused on it and then it just kind of started growing. So all those three are sort of interconnected. And with that comes a lot of topics to talk about in terms of podcasts. I mean, there's a lot of great people out there, you know, to have a conversation with in regards to, like, one of our latest podcasts was on mental health, which is, you know, that's a hot topic, right? Everyone talks about mental health and isolation and how do you balance? And so, you know, I try to bring relevant people, just kind of like, you know, you in the wellness industry, maybe someone who's, you know, marriage and family person or whatever, that's still sort of very relevant because we do try to stay very relevant to what's happening in our climate. But in the same sense, we stay away from controversial topics as well. Like, we don't really talk about politics or anything of that nature, but we try to keep it positive. We try to keep it educational. And again, sharing knowledge and ideas to others, like-minded people.
How can people connect with you?
You can email me, go to the website, bcdesignhouse.com. That's HAUS.com. Email us there. I'll definitely get it. You can follow our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's called The House Report, and House is HAUS Report. And we also have a newsletter. So if you go onto our website, you can subscribe to our newsletter, which we get on a weekly basis. And again, talks about the three pillars: design and branding, entrepreneurship, and leadership.
Thank you very much for this. I really, really appreciate it. Carving out some time in the afternoon after all the kids were done with school and trying to juggle all the work and everything like that. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
All of Bernadette's contact info is in the show notes, and you can find me at aaronbender.com. Please subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Be well.